Thank you very much. All right, we have some time now for questions, comments, opinions from the audience on the informal seed sector. Please state your name and organization, if you don't mind, as we pass the microphone around. And also feel free to direct a question to one or all of the speakers. And Carl, do you want to come up to the front here to make it a bit easier? And I'll up the lights as well. Why not? So do we have any questions from our in-person audience? And we'll take some from our online as well, but we'll start here in person.
Hi. First of all, I want to thank you. Very interesting and informative presentations. My name is Robert Jacoby. I'm with DAI. And my question is for the Catalyst project in Bangladesh. And with the packaging, did the project pay for the new packaging? And how did you identify the seed company? And who paid for the new packaging? Was that the project that paid or the private?
Mehdi, over to you.
Sorry, we didn't hear that. Can you please?
To repeat the question?
Yeah, Mehdi, yes, I was wondering, did the project pay the seed suppliers for the new packaging, or did the seed suppliers use their own investments for the new packaging? And if, regardless of who paid, after the next planting season, is it sustainable?
That's because I'm going to be answering the question.
Thank you very much for the question.
Can you hear me?
Yes, Hello. We can hear you now.
Thank you. So to answer the first question, we at Catalyst work on a cost-sharing basis. So initially, we share the cost of not the product, but let's say rather the launching of the product and basically identify or the study that went on beforehand to identify which seed varieties would be working more. For example, as you can tell from this entire discussion, the open pollinated varieties are more, let's say, available at local level. So these formal companies also compete with the informal sector in that segment. So selecting that was where we added value. Also in terms of promoting the mini packet idea in forms of farmer training, demonstration, is where we shared costs. But in terms of the actual packaging, no costs were shared, was the answer to the first segment. The second segment was it sustainable, if I'm correct? Well, as we shared already, we started the intervention in 2011, and we kind of stopped our cost sharing or our activities with them by 2012, and it's already 2015, and we see it has already reached around 600,000 beneficiaries on their own. So they are continuing to do that. So in many ways, it's a sustaining activity. I hope I have answered your query properly.
So let's take a question from our online audience.
A question was posed on the event page of the AgriLinks website prior to the event. Babakar asks, what are locally envisioned solutions to short cycle hybrids and locally adapted varieties?
Is that a question you can chime in on, Carl?
Well, I wonder solutions to what exactly in that case? Maybe the availability would be what, or access sorts of issues are what come to mind. I mean, I think the immediate response there is kind of the general topic of our seminar, right? That the informal seed sector really has a wide range of capacities involved that really does include hybrids and short cycle varieties. So the informal sector doesn't have kind of an exclusive hold to those sorts of seed products, but it certainly does have the capacity to circulate and make accessible and available those kinds of planting materials. So it's a generally relevant point to what we're interested in. I guess it illustrates kind of the scope of what the informal seed sector does cover in terms of products like short cycle and hybrid seeds.
Hi, I'm Ariella Zeigerman. I'm a AAAS fellow at NSF. I have two questions, one for Carl and one for the Catalyst Group. So I'll start with Carl because he's in the room. So in that graph you showed that said you can keep biodiversity high even in the face of intensification if you stay on the upper curve, mm-hmm. I want to know what that looks like in reality, how that works out.
Right.
And my question for the Catalyst people is, from your 12-cent mini packs, how much of the yields go to food, how much to seed savings, and how much to the marketplace?
So, I mean, that is the $64,000 question of how to stay on that upper curve. How can intensification trajectories occur while biodiversity is being conserved? And there's a really lot of interesting, important work looking at sort of different angles of that. One way of addressing it, and maybe the one that's most consistent with what I was talking about in the slide there, is that there's a very high level of case study or local specificity in those solutions as to how intensification trajectories occur and biodiversity is conservation is compatible with those scenarios. So in the case that I was talking about, I mean, it's a good and important question. Farmers were able to basically intensify increased levels of production in certain field systems while resizing, rescoping their high agrobiodiversity field systems, largely because in that context, they really value those seeds and those high agrobiodiversity foodstuffs for local consumption and local marketing. So those rationales were kind of the behind the seeds forces that drove a lot of innovation, right? I mean, they were working with smaller fields, they were working with fields with different different growing seasons. Water management turns out to be really related to this. And the point that I want to connect to is that all those innovations that they made, that they were open to, that they were creating, depended on an informal seed system circulating material that worked for them, right? The seeds were present. It's a pretty densely populated area. Where in my view, in a pretty positive way, part of that smallholder landscape is that people buy and sell seeds, and that created an informal system that kept pumping in shorter cycle material or material that worked for the latest, greatest way of making a favorite locally consumed item or whatever. So that's and that's also like, that's my view in the sense of like a definitely an ecology and food emphasis. That's kind of where I come from when I think about intensification, is ecology and food security issues. Other people do it differently, but that's like how I those are the kind of analyses that I emphasize. So
great. And Catalyst, could you address the breakdown of the 12 cents of your seed packets and where the money is going to?
We observed that 60% of the seeds there were commercial farmers and 40% were homestead farmers. So from the 60% of the commercial farmers, we found that most of the produce was sold in the marketplace, and around that for the homestead farmers, 50% were sold in the marketplace and 50% were consumed by the homestead farmers and their members, or family members. But we did not observe any seed savings as such from this intervention. But I guess they saved, but we couldn't like track that out. I guess this answers your question. Thank you.
All right, we'll take a question from online and then come back up here.
Okay. So Colin Query has a question. There's been some online discussion about the role of seed laws and how that trickles down to smallholder farmers. And he's interested in hearing about successful experiences where informal seed systems can coexist and thrive where there are strong national seed laws. His experience has been that overly restrictive laws can harm the informal system, but has heard that perhaps in other areas they can work together to be mutually supportive. Have you seen greater benefit or harm?
Is that something that, Victor, you might like to chime in on, or in Carl, or anyone?
I didn't get that quite clear.
Victor, if you'd like to chime in, it was a question about seed laws and how the informal seed sector can still operate well if seed laws might be a little bit too restrictive in some cases. Successful examples?
Sorry, it's still not quite clear to me here.
No, I mean, I share the general observation,
Well, if I can take that, now, the seed laws, I mean, I think it varies from location to location, but in principle, the seed laws are there, but I think the challenge is the implementation, you know. Most of these are supposed to be done by the public sector, but we all know that the challenge is that they are, in most cases, understaffed, and then in some places, too, they are too centralized, and they are not able to be able to reach some of these communities that are in the hinterland. And therefore, people just go around, do stuff, and they are not checked. You know? So a lot of seed, for example, is just sold that are not certified in countries where they're supposed to be certified. So that is a challenge.
I'm Peter Boone. I guess I direct my question a little bit at... To Carl and Victor, in terms of the informal seed sectors, I didn't hear a lot of the major challenges of the informal seed sector coming out of your discussions that I did hear in the Swiss Contact one. Some of the challenges, you know, are pretty well known, that there's... just in general, a lot of low quality. You don't hear a lot of quality seed coming out of an informal system. There's almost no potential that I know of for hybrids coming out of there. You know, when you're talking drought resistant, so there's the list of challenges is, at least in a lot of places I've been, is almost overwhelming. They're often saving the lowest quality seed from the plant that survived in the field but never produced a lot, and then when they do store it, it's not under very good conditions. So when we talk about all this exciting, you know, interconnecting and scaling up and crowdsourcing and all this information, that's an investment, and I'm just wondering, you know, at the cost benefit level, are we investing in a very weak and almost broken system just because it's out there?
Yeah. Okay, thanks for your question. I think one of the main challenges of the informal system is trying to get them institutionalized. You know, because, like I said, most of them seem to be based on donor funding, and then once the project comes to a close, the sustainability component is not well laid off, and then it becomes a challenge. But even in the course of implementing some of the donor projects, there are issues, lots of them, but maybe I'll talk about three. One that we particularly found in the case of Tanzania was the issue of differentiation of the produce, whatever seeds that are produced. Because you also have farmers just selling seeds that are not certified or have not gone through proper regulatory systems and are sold in the market. Now, we also had facilitated and what the farmers to produce seeds under the quality declared seed system, but they did not have any basis for any options to brand it. You know, in Tanzania, for example, seeds are sold in empty matchboxes, for example, and you cannot differentiate between what a farmer has just taken out from his or her harvest and then the one that we went through the certification process to get certified, and it's of course supposed to be of a better quality. They were sold in the same container, so there was no branding, and that was a big challenge in trying to differentiate this product from what could also be a seed that is not of good quality. One other thing that they face is, of course, in terms of the implementation, is also the processing. You know, they mostly have to use local materials to do manual processing, and this can sometimes be a challenge, particularly when it's on a small scale. So sometimes they will need like a seed extractor, you know, to be able to improve the quality and stuff like that. Then you talk about a very important critical issue in the case of vegetable seeds, and particularly for traditional African vegetables. One of the main challenges that farmers encounter is seed viability. Now, for these type of vegetables, normally once seed is harvested and is processed and kept at room temperature, most of them will lose viability after 6 months. Now, if they are not kept under a cold storage or a proper storage requirement, I mean, at our center, we have cold storage and things to keep the atmosphere balanced. But farmers just keep them in their house. So after 6 months, they lose viability, and some of them still keep trying to grow them or sell them in the next season when the seeds are actually in a fire. You know? And this actually requires we need to do a lot of doing capacity building and telling them that some of these plants, I mean, talk about something like spider plants, it's so viable that after 6 months it loses viability, and under such a circumstance it has to be kept under cold storage conditions. So maybe I'll just highlight on these three, but the main thing is that we need to try to get these informacy systems, try to institutionalize them, and by linking them to formal systems, that I think we have a lot of programs trying to get this done. And that probably is one way to strengthen these systems. Thanks.
So that's a great question. I think that one way I tend to think about it is that the extent of these smallholder informal sector seed systems is so vast that there's actually a huge amount of variation within it. And for I mean, I'm a researcher, so for me it kind of opens the question, what about the variation of seed quality across or within that system? Because, I mean, the thing about seed quality is growers themselves are highly aware of seed quality differences. They're, you know, they're not technical experts, but they're not...
They care a lot about it.
It has an immediate impact. So, you know, in some sense, what we're looking at is kind of the trade-offs between accessibility of seed, meaning low cost, and quality of seed that tends to be associated with higher prices. And so there's a range there, and kind of looking at that variation and looking at sort of viable kind of combinations in that range, I think is a really interesting, going back to Mark's point at the beginning, this is just, in some ways, this is a knowledge gap in terms of understanding these systems. That said, I mean, I think it's also interesting that there is at least some evidence that these informal sector seeds and varieties in particular can perform pretty well. So, for example, in the India case, it's roughly those varieties that are being sort of performance tested. This is not seed per se, but it gets to that question of sort of the traditional, typically underperforming components. The traditional varieties are certainly performing better than the lowest end of the improved varieties. And in fact, there are a couple of traditional varieties that are up in the upper part of the range. So that
they might be disease resistant
locally. And so that is to say that the informal seed system does have material in it that's relatively high performing. Last point is just, I see this as potentially an opportunity. Seed quality is of interest to everyone. If you think about crowdsourcing as a sharing of information, not only about types of seed, but about seed quality, best practices, etc., those kinds of crowdsourcing and information sharing can connect dots between type of variety and quality of seed. That's very kind of inherently linked, compatible material. And so to undertake some of these approaches potentially brings in issues that are totally relevant, but not necessarily a part of existing discussions.
We have time for a couple more questions. But in the meantime, if you need to take off early, we always ask you to fill out the survey that was on your seat. It helps us improve the events for the future. And you can either leave it on the table or drop it off at the table as you're heading out. And also take as much food as you desire on your way out if you are here in person. All right, so we'll take a couple more. I'll throw it back and just see if we have one more from our online audience. And also let us know how many people were joining online. Thanks.
Yes, we had, I think, about 80 people joining us online today. So, and there was a robust online discussion as well that we will be posting to the event page. So if people would like to take a look at some of the questions that were talked about in other programs, please do check back in. We have a question from Stephen Walsh, who is curious about the efforts to impart quality on the seed sector. Has there been more of a focus of embedding capacity to assess quality at the seed merchant and producer level, or has quality been left more to an inspection system and regulatory environment?
Interesting. Where is the quality being verified and assessed? And actually, I'll just jump in really quickly to let everyone here and online know that we have a AgriLinks webinar next Tuesday on e-verification of agricultural inputs that includes seeds as well as fertilizer. So that also might contribute to this discussion. A webinar-only event next Tuesday.
Maybe the online people would have that sort of seed merchant perspective.
Victor or the Catalyst team, do you want to jump in on that?
I have a hard time hearing the question.
It was hard to hear the question. It was mostly about verifying the quality of seed, where that occurs along the value chain. Does it occur?
Yeah, the regulation also just the capacity to assess.
Okay, if I can come in. So the quality normally is in steps right from the production. So, I mean, in the case of Tanzania, for example, the seed inspectors will initially they need to get information about the plots where the seeds will be grown. And then, of course, we need to also have already got the seeds that will be planted or certified. So that is already checked. And once it's planted in the course of the seed multiplication plot, they would arrange to come in at some point in the production cycle, I think twice, at a growth stage and also just before harvest. And then once it is harvested, they also take it to the lab to do some testing, and once it goes through that testing procedure and it's approved, then we can certify that. So, and I think this varies from country to country. You know. But normally the inspectors come in at the beginning of the production and also after the seeds have been processed.
Tom Timberg, consultant. Sort of following up on Mr. Boone's question. Following on Mr. Boone's question, I don't think anybody would lack admiration for the kind of research you're doing because of its focus on the bulk of small farmers and subsistence, etc. The question that might be raised is the value of public sector involvement in promoting these networks or public sector investment. The question is, can that add value? Do you have any studies that would indicate the cost-benefit analysis of those kinds of investments from the point of view of increasing income or even resilience?
Yeah, that's
this conference appears to be inactive and will be ended soon. If you are the host and wish this conference to continue.
Okay. What a nice prelude. I think that's relevant to a lot of this. Certainly, there's a ton of added value in the, my most general answer is there's a ton of added value in the informal seed sector. This is extensive. There are value chains where value gets added, and we should never lose sight of that. It's not necessarily the same margins. It's not necessarily the same, it's probably it's a much more kind of incremental, smaller additions, but multiplied across large numbers of actors and individuals. So again, maybe this goes to Mark's kind of information gap. We don't know that much about, the kind of medium or large scale value chains in the informal seed sector that I'm aware of. So in a general sense, I think that's relevant. Another point that I always need to make in the case of my research is that's an extremely pertinent question, and yet biodiversity conservation, which is just one part of what I'm talking about, but that's, it's difficult to do valuation studies there. Those are public goods with kind of these broad spectrum benefits. And there are certainly many economists who specialize in these kinds of issues. It's my impression and understanding that they too would not have like cost benefit kinds of comparisons that they could pull out right away, but they would refer to specific public good kinds of values and functioning of biodiversity, the biodiversity piece of this. So those are maybe a couple of responses to where's the value in this, and I didn't come up with a cost benefit, but I do think addressing value is extremely relevant, important. Thanks for that question.
Great. We are coming up on time, and I always like to end our seminars right on time. So I'd like to say a wonderful thank you to Carl, to Victor, and to our team from Catalyst for presenting today. And most importantly, thank you to everyone who joined us in person and online. And keep an eye out for future emails about future events. So thank you.